As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
Little bit since the last edition of Time's Ours right here on The Athletic. Joshua Briscoe, Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser, the whole trio back together here now. OTAs have gotten up and running, friends, and it's good to be doing the show again, but I gotta ask if you guys are feeling nervous at all right now. Like, are you worried?
A bit, but it's I don't know. You tell me, Josh.
I don't know. Well, Seth, are you worried?
I mean, I'm not that worried. It's OTAs. There's going to be a few guys missing. It happens every year.
Oh.
If guys start missing the man...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I do apologize. I was talking about if you were worried like I am that Tyreek Hill is coming to take our jobs as professional podcasters. That's what keeps me up at night.
Well, he does send out better video clips than what we do. So all we got to do is just release a quick clip. So here, I've got you. I mean, I guess when you really think about it, we should probably discuss the fact whether or not Patrick Mahomes does really want to be traded from the Chiefs and has suppressed his own stats to make that happen. I mean, we should. What do you guys think? Do you guys think that's happened?
Well, you know,
cut it right there.
You know what? Seth, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to pose this question. I'd like to hear your answer. Do you know for a fact that Patrick Mahomes has both of his arms? Cut.
Hey. So, did Troy Aikman call you?
I know we'll get into this with the mailbag later, but I did see some questions about us upping our teaser game, and I did want to at least acknowledge that in the podcasting world, where one audio clip really can be used to get some people in trouble, that we really do have some expertise in that. Maybe it's not quite 33% of the engagement that Tyreek Hill got for his clip, but I'd like to think it's enough. So anyway, I hope that does conclude our conversations about our new rival podcast, as we can hopefully talk about other things here, including some mailbag questions later on. We started trying to do this show with me on a hotspot today because the storm in Kansas City last night apparently ripped all of the internet out of the cables. I'm not sure how that works. And so our our setup today now is that I've got Zoom open on my phone with my AirPods in, talking into a real microphone, actually recording this. So my audio quality is going to be fine, but I 2 minutes into the show can tell that there might be a little bit of a delay problem. And so if that ends up being the case, you know, this is going to be a big Seth and Nate show if I can. And also Seth's hosting the mailbag segment today because I can't use my internet to read the responses. So there's your quality warning at the beginning. And we do actually have like a few real things that we could talk about that's not podcast or technology related.
Is it scare anyone else how little we know about how the internet works? Because, I mean, gun to my head, I could not tell you, like, Seth, why is the internet out? I'd be like, I don't know. Like, I mean, they unplugged
the servers.
The servers.
Cable unplugged.
It's like there's an episode of the IT Crowd where they like have this, you know, what's in this box is the internet. And so she brings it to a whole, it's just this whole thing. And it made me realize, like, I literally don't know what the internet actually is or how it works. So
it's just a 5G, dog. It's just, I'm telling you, I'm yeah. out here telling you that, like, they're on to us and we're on to them. No, I just get the sense that it's just a strange time. It's okay. Look, I am here for the undergarments. You're here for the teaser. You know, what comes first, the undergarments or the teaser? Okay, because I want the undergarments. You know me. I'm someone who is an advocate for zippers being unzipped. All right, so. If you want these hot teasers in these hot streets, that's okay. I need a couple undergarments, you know, and then you can re-up on the back end.
We're gonna get those boxers in a bunch over the course of today's show.
I mean,
I hate the word panties. I don't like the phrase panties in a wad. It's just bad. I hate all of it. And so I've gotten boxers in a bunch. That's my alternative.
Yeah, G strings don't really roll off. Or banana, you know, banana.
Banana,
I don't understand
banana suits.
Am I going to be the one that tries to keep us on track today? Because I'm not equipped for that, guys. That is not something I'm capable of doing. We have had people like asking us about making new podcasts. Like, there's stuff going on, guys. There's OTAs, and all I can say is yes, there are OTAs. I would respectfully disagree that there's stuff going on though. Like, it's well, just, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for a quick recap of what happened last week, I spent more time watching Patrick Mahomes play golf than I did watching NFL players go through a non-pad voluntary practice. So in that case, obviously I will provide you all with the insight and the reasonable information that we can glean from these early, you know, sort of introduction to the new scheme or to whatever new concepts we're thinking about that the team is going through. But yeah, there's, you know, this doesn't have the appeal of, you know, previous years when they've had OTAs. But, you know, there's some interesting characters who are there, and there are interesting characters who have not been there.
That, I mean, that's the main topic of conversation at this point, right? Yeah, I mean, it's who is there and who isn't. And boy, if Seth and I started talking at the same time to Seth's ears, we are bleeped. Because I had like a 15-second head start on my end. This is going to be a challenge.
Who's going to tell him, Nate, you or me?
That's bad, huh?
I don't know. It's you tell him. You started talking, and I literally was like, how long will this go? How long will my heart go on?
I think that we all need to understand that whatever Josh just said was full of import, and generally, I'm sure it was really good analysis. I'm guessing he's probably talking about the fact that really running backs should be taken in the first round. And if you really think about
it. Here's the thing. I'm just going to start talking over him because honestly, who knows when I'll start talking. But what I know is that the listener, you, the listener right now, can hear me because I'm talking into an un-internet connected microphone that's being recorded that I'll email out later. So the truth will be known on this podcast, even as Seth and Nate come to slander my name. Now, I don't know if they can hear me or if I sound like T-Pain. But it's tough out here.
I don't know.
What even is 5G?
Actually, hear him.
Oh, this.
The internet is just thwarting every effort we make.
How you guys power through? Power through. I'm going to try some stuff. I can't hear you.
Just keep talking, Josh, so I can't hear it. No. Only in like these very It's like if someone wanted to mess with like musical production or audio.
It really is. It's like the scene from, did you ever see the Trolls holiday movie? Where they go and they create a bunch of holidays for the unhappy Gorkins or whatever they're called. You remember that at all?
Oh, man. No, I don't. No. Uh-uh.
They've made so many troll movies. One thing that they do during part of it is like they go on this weird kind of almost acid type trip, because that's how kids movies are now. And they're like the one that like does the T-Pain voice all the time in the original movie, he goes, "I'm feeling weird," with the T-Pain type voice. And that's exactly what Josh sounds like to us right now. So Josh is going to try to reconnect. We are going to try to power through. And if you, the listener, have powered through in the last 2 minutes, I have so much respect for you. And we really appreciate the people that love this podcast enough to stick with us through the tough times. So, well, Nate, let's just like, we'll quit dancing around it. I mean, so Orlando Brown Jr. is not at voluntary OTAs. And he, you know, the part of the delay was he couldn't find an agent, mm-hmm. which now we see why it took him so long to find an agent, because he wanted an agent that didn't have a pre-existing relationship, according to Mike Garofalo, with NFL GMs, which is definitely, I mean, good for Mike for getting that. That is definitely one way to go about things. Like, hey, you have no experience in this business, so I bet you can do what I want you to do. I don't know what to think of that. And I also don't know what to think about, I mean, his comments about, you know, this isn't the year to go in with a backup left tackle. I mean, he's not wrong. So I'm just curious what you think about where things are with Orlando Brown Jr. People are freaking out because there's really nothing else to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm also curious.
Unbelievable. Now he's taking a step down to like, this is Josh talking to his son from 30 years in the future, warning him about his impending murder, much like the movie Radio. I think that was Radio.
I dialed in with the phone to Zoom. I didn't even know you could still do that. That's a Skype feature from 2014. But here I am. Sorry for interrupting. I just want you to know I'm back and I sound like this now to you guys. But again, listening audience, just here's my beautiful, you know, microphone quality.
You sound like you're in a well and like we yeah. got no rope, no buckets.
Sorry, dog. Straight to hell. And we are sitting
What's
here.
What's that,
like,
Lassie?
You need to record this podcast though, buddy. You know, just try to stay alive. So,
hey man, we're going to throw a lav mic down into hell for Josh. All right, I'm done. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, the only significant news other than the match, hope you watch it. It was on TNT. It was quite the time. Is that, hey, you know, I think it was understandable as to why Florian Clark wouldn't be at the voluntary practices. It's understandable why Chris Jones wouldn't be at the voluntary practices. Those guys aren't asking for a lucrative contract extension that we know of. So for Orlando Brown to hire Michael Portner as his new agent, someone who will be negotiating his first NFL contract with Orlando Brown as his first client, it's the more I think about it, the more fascinating this sort of storyline gets, Seth and Josh, because I think a lot of outcomes are on the table, and that's rare in this point of the offseason, because as you move forward to this franchise tag deadline, things become more clear, or they should generally. But I just think there's a lot more avenues at play here. There's a lot more options, and Orlando Brown wants to do things his way, with what he feels is of great value to the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are, you know, trying to get to an understanding as to like where they can meet Orlando Brown and Michael Portner in the middle, but he wants to be one of the highest paid left tackles in the league. And now it's about how you structure that. It's about, are you comfortable doing that with just 1 year of a sample size with him in the offense, an offense that is, you know, going to change because of the personnel that's changing surrounding this person. And if you are going to figure out something, how can you structure it to where, you know, it is beneficial for the team, but also continues to incentivize, you know, the best production out of Orlando Brown moving forward?
I don't know. It's hard to
say. Hosting's not so easy, is it, Seth? Huh? You talked a big game about a couple minutes ago, and all of a sudden we got to sit here in 10 seconds of silence. You come up with a smart response or a pivot question.
I genuinely thought that you might talk, but again, I assume you're wrestling Samara for control of the mic as you are at the bottom of the pit. And hopefully you learn how to harness her powers to climb out of there at some point.
That's honestly, it's not that. It's hotter down here than I'd like for it to be, but other than that, it's not that bad. Really overhyped.
There's plenty of water to drink. It's just a little bit rough. So the thing with Orlando Brown Jr. is, I mean, I think the team wants him, and I think he wants to be here. It's just, I think whenever you sign a guy who essentially demanded a trade from his previous place because they wouldn't play him at the position he thought he was best suited at.
Correct.
And hey, fair enough. Demand whatever you want, right? Like, I mean, this free country, do your thing. But you know you're getting someone who has a very specific idea about their value, and they are going to, how do I phrase this, advocate for that. Mm. And that can make these things a little more contentious.
So let me ask you this, Nate. Because, you know, Seth says, well, the Chiefs want him here. What I would argue is the Chiefs traded for him, and it seemed like, I mean, from the jump, the agreement last year was, hey, play out the end of your deal here. We'll talk about the deal next offseason. We want to see what you look like at left tackle for a full year in this system. And Seth, I want to know what you think of Orlando Brown last season, as well as we're trying to figure out what he's actually worth. But if you're the Chiefs right now, I would have thought that the assumption was that they were going to have a long-term deal done this offseason as the culmination of the trade last offseason. But is there anything that we're missing there, Nate? Like, would the Chiefs be willing to say, yeah, I don't know, come play out the franchise tag and we'll do it next offseason? Would they be willing to do anything more dramatic than that? Or is this just a matter of time?
Yeah, it's a matter of, like, giving yourself time and being comfortable with that, right? The Chiefs have the ability to prevent him from reaching free agency, which they chose to do with the franchise tag. You know, I think any logical person, fan, observer would understand why the team did that. You know, it gives you essentially a, hey, this is just our negotiation. This is not you and the rest of the league or the other teams who are, you know, in need of a starting left tackle who, by the way, earned a Pro Bowl selection with his new team in a new system a year ago. And I know we're going to get to Seth's sort of evaluation of that. But what makes all of this super interesting is I think most people will say he's not the best left tackle. And then the question becomes, well, where do you evaluate him amongst his peers, given that he's a lot younger than the peers that he is sort of surrounded by? And, you know, yes, the contracts are structured in a certain way that, like, it should match the way the cap is going to rise to the expectation that the league has. But also, I get the sense that, like, you know, Orlando wants to maximize his potential and what he believes is his leverage, which is obviously, hey, I'm the best guy available right now, which is why you traded for me a year ago and I haven't done anything to dissuade you, or my performance shouldn't dissuade you from you making that decision a year ago, where you looked around, you surveyed the draft class, the rest of the free agents, who was essentially available on the trade block, and you picked me. So now it's time for you to pick me or reaffirm that selection with a contract that sort of states that. But the Chiefs and NFL teams in general, not just them, have the diabolical means of saying, hey, one more year, do it again. Let's see it one more time. Hey, don't get injured. Hey, you were reliable last year. You were durable last year. Do it again. And at a very controlled cost, at a premium position that you would not have under any other circumstances, because we have somehow collectively bargained that we can do this to you. So do it again. And if you don't want to, and this is where it gets really, this is where negotiation happens. If you don't want to be here at the voluntary OTAs, if you want to say that you're better than your teammates and let the world know this, and you're not going to show up for mandatory minicamp, this is where it gets
this pause intentionally left blank. Yeah.
Yes, this pause is very intentional. Yeah, this sure, is yeah. This is where it gets problematic, because as much as of this is a Brett Veach thing, this is an Andy Reid thing. And I just want to really acknowledge that and want the listener to acknowledge that. Like, this is Andy Reid and Brett Veach, Orlando Brown Jr., Michael Portner. These are the four people that matter, with Clark Hunt making the final decision. Because who is the chairman of the finance committee in the NFL?
I believe that would be chairman and CEO of the Kansas City Chiefs, Clark Hunt.
So he knows money, right?
It seems like the man knows money.
Seems like he knows money. So there's four primary people, with a fifth person sort of, you know, kind of not in it to the nitty gritty, but obviously, you know, is involved. Mm-hmm. This could go a lot of ways, fellas. And I don't think I've said that much about any contract. Like, there are more mm-hmm. things that could go on here. And I think I'm okay saying this. There are more outcomes than Tyreek Hill's eventual outcome in March.
Interesting, because
I think Hill, there was only two ways to play this out. And the team mm-hmm. understood it with Tyreek Hill. And they said, we are going to take option B. Or option A, depending on your perspective. But they were like, we're going to choose option B because we feel like we're being forced into option A.
Sure. And that would be option A being top of the line money.
Yes.
Most in the NFL. And that was it. And right. I mean, that's the funny thing on that. Rosenhaus has said that. He said, we wanted most of the NFL, which, fair enough, he'd earned it. And I don't really have an issue with that. And then option B was trade him. So with Orlando Brown, I think one of the reasons it becomes a little bit different is I don't know if trading him is necessarily an option right now.
I'm
curious.
Yeah, you would be trading him at a weird point in the asset valuation cycle.
Right. And the interesting thing with him is who do you compare him to when you look at the guys currently under contract? Is he comparing himself to Colton Miller and Garrett Bowles? Because that's probably about where he's at in terms of how he's played, although he's quite a bit younger than Bowles. Because he's not David Bakhtiari. He's not Trent Williams. Right? Like, there's those two
guys. Is he Armstead? And that's what I've been asking most people. Is he Armstead? But again,
right.
That's difference in years, difference in experience. Like,
right. And recent health history.
Yes.
Because I would just say Armstead is a better player. Mm. Brown is 5 years younger and has been way healthier.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Although, I mean, one of those two things is basically a luck thing. So it really is about where you value a good but not great left tackle that could be more, because these guys usually don't peak until they're, you know, 28, 29. And then you've got like a 3 or 4 year peak. And he's gotten better every year as a pro. All that's important. I'm just curious. The wide range of outcomes fascinates me. I'm fascinated by that.
Because if I can drill down on that some, Nate, I mean, that is, again, that's extension, weird time for a trade, but those are the two options for Tyreek Hill. Playing out under the franchise tag, perhaps. Right. Mm-hmm. I guess a long-term holdout could be an option. Yep. I don't know, is there one there that we're missing?
Yeah, holdout, sitting out the entire year, which I don't think Orlando Brown will do. But again, that's, like, if you get so disillusioned by where the negotiations go, and the idea that, like, you know, hey man, we didn't appreciate how this offseason went from our perspective, that being the team, then you can say, well, maybe I feel I'm more valuable not playing than playing. Now, again, that's weird. I'm sort of projecting way out in advance, but it's an issue of like, okay, the outcome is I play and I get hurt. I play and I'm not as good as I was last year. And so my value is decreased. Mm-hmm. I play and I play well, or hell, I play and I play better. And now I feel so frustrated by the way this went last year. And I told you a year ago, I'm mostly talking from the Orlando Brown, Michael Portner, you know, sort of viewpoint on this. We told y'all a year ago how committed I was, how much I was going to get better. Like, but now I want free agency, or it's going to cost you twice if you double, you know, franchise tag me. And that'll make it even more, you know, difficult because, I don't know, Kirk Cousins wasn't even the best quarterback in his division, and they still did it, which is wild. But again, he plays quarterback. He actually has the ball in his hands. But what ended up happening there, like, it became very obvious that the moment Kirk Cousins could actually get to free agency, the relationship was so sour. Now, granted, was the organization as good as the Chiefs are? No. But he went elsewhere. And so you're going to have to make a change at that position, again, a premium position, where you may not have, if you bought in earlier, if you gave the extension at an earlier time frame. You know, there may be a situation where you get an outcome where, okay, we begrudgingly agree to this, and then in 2 years' time, based on what happened in the offseason of 2022, I'm not going to be Patrick Mahomes' left tackle for the majority of his career, or throughout my career, which is what Orlando Brown wants, because that's what Michael Portner told me. Like, he wants to be Patrick Mahomes' left tackle throughout his career. But there's a way of these things sort of either deteriorating or strengthening over the timeline of there's a deadline that honestly is contrived in an excellent, again, maniacal manner by the NFL. I don't know why we have to have the deadline be July 15th. Has someone explained this to me that, like, really knows the CBA? And yeah, the NFL is all about, like, distraction nonsense when it comes to, like, everyone gets to training camp and they're all in. Which, sure, but, like, tell that to Tyrann Mathieu last training camp. Anyway, why is the deadline July 15th? Like, I guess that's a question that, like, I just ask all the time, and I'm like, you franchise them in March, you have until July, but like, what if you guys figure something out in, like, I don't know, September, like before the season starts? But that's neither here nor there.
That part is very weird. I don't know why this is the deadline. I'm guessing that probably somebody on the ownership side decided that rule, because that's typically how that works, right? That's very strange.
It might be.
The NFLPA is just put in a tough spot. We've talked about this before. They're in a weird position because it's a different type of league than any other type of league because of the size of teams.
Mm-hmm.
You have, in the NBA, there's way more non-stars than stars, but the ratio is very different. And so when you're negotiating things like franchise tags or these kind of imaginary deadlines that really only affect the franchise tag and mega contracts, 90-ish percent of the league, which means, you know, 1,500 dudes, don't care about that. You know what I mean? If I'm, let's say, and I'm just using him as an example, he's a player I really like, but if I'm Andrew Wiley, and I'm talking to my players association rep about what issues matter to me, the franchise tag is not one of them.
Right.
Because it's never going to matter for him. And it's not just him. That's even like, if you want to use it, like maybe even like Creed Humphrey, because a center is not nearly as likely to be franchise tag. Now, maybe it could, but you're also, as a rookie, that's probably not the thing you're as concerned about, right? You're probably more concerned with certain other aspects of things that have recently affected you. And so the NFLPA, they're in a tough spot because, you know, I can imagine, again, and Andrew Wiley would probably care because Patrick Mahomes cares and he seems like a good dude, honestly. You know me, I love good dudes. But it's one of those things where if I'm a guy who is fighting to stay on the roster as a special team spot or, you know, as the fourth string wide receiver that gets 40 targets a year. I care much more about like retirement benefits kicking mm-hmm. in when they kick in. I care about minimum salary. And so what the owners can do, and diabolical is a good word for it. If you wanted to be, you know, if you wanted to be heartless, you can say it's just good business. They can say, well, fellas, you know what we're gonna do? We are going to up the minimum, the veteran minimum. First, what we're going to do is we're going to lower the amount of years it takes to reach the veteran minimum by a year. And boy, does that affect a lot more dudes than the salary, than the franchise tag. And you know what else we're going to do? We're going to raise it by $100,000. And I'm a guy that says, wait, I'm a veteran minimum dude. I won $100,000 more last year. And they say, but, you know, about the franchise tag, I'm going to say, what do I give a crap about that for? And that's the position that the NFLPA is in, is you've got a league that consists of vast majority are non-stars. And that just makes it tough to do anything about the star stuff. And that's why the franchise tag is probably never going away, in my opinion.
Yeah. And Orlando Brown Jr. wants to be a star. And sometimes, in order to be a star, they give you bonus hazard pay. And that's essentially what the franchise tag is. It is bonus hazard pay, because if you can get through it, it's a nice bonus. It's more than you probably would have made under normal circumstances, because you're good and you're valuable, but you're like, you're not Patrick Mahomes. So could you like do this on like a bonus hazard pay? And like, if you get through it, then like, hey, great credit to you. But there's a lot of hazard. It's football. It's just, so I look at the franchise tag as like selective bonus hazard pay. And if you want to get out of the situation, the best thing to do is to prove your value. And there are a number of ways of doing that. Orlando has made his choices so far. They have been fascinating. And, you know, the Chiefs are going to have to make a decision as to, hey, we are from a baseline comfortable letting you play on a, you know, on a 1 year, $16.69 million. But we may only have your services for a year. And does that outweigh negotiating something that, you know, could benefit the player greatly and could also benefit the organization, but no one has a crystal ball. Like that's just the truth. So Orlando Brown, from my understanding, has done a lot more training on his own this offseason. But he's also like not with the team right now during the team activities, as well as the mandatory minicamp that's going to happen next week. Michael Portner has never negotiated an NFL contract, and he has to do it in 5 weeks. These are circumstances that are extremely rare.
Buckle up,
man, that is,
I guess.
That is not happy news. And that's and who knows? I mean, 5 weeks is a long time. One reason I've had for optimism is that the Chiefs did have, you know, they made an offer to Trent Williams last year. So they have a framework for what they'd pay an elite player. They also have the framework with Eric Fisher from years ago. And obviously times have changed, but you've got some frameworks to work with. It's just, you just never know how someone wants to negotiate.
This is the question that I've continued to ask. And this was before Michael Portner was involved. Now he is involved, but like, are the Chiefs going to give Orlando Brown the Ronnie Stanley contract? Because Ronnie Stanley was the left tackle that the Baltimore Ravens chose over Orlando Brown for that amount of money, that amount of years. And to Orlando Brown's credit, you could say he's performed better than Ronnie Stanley the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So this is the question for both you fellas. Are you willing to give Orlando Brown, you know, 5 years, $100 million, $60 to $70 million of a guarantee?
Man, that guaranteed money is what's crazy in Stanley's contract. because the fully guaranteed for Williams is 40. For Bach, it's 30. Tunsil's 40. And then Stanley, 64. I mean, his contract, it's a unicorn in terms of guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if that comes up. That is a really good, that's an interesting thing that that they could do in negotiations, though, to try to play to the human element, is offer him more money than what Stanley got. But man, I mean, yeah, how do you fully guarantee more than $60 million, like, without him making some major concession in terms of the average per year, right? That it's just, I think it's just going to be tough. But it is, I don't know, it's just funny that, you know, we get all this from, you know, voluntary mini camps against air that I'm sure are scintillating, Nate. Like,
I mean. Haven't seen Sky Moore run a rip yet, guys. It's been something, you know.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was thinking about asking, Nate, is there anything else we should get from OTAs that we haven't talked about yet, or should we get straight into the mailbag? And I think that was your answer before I even asked that question.
Yeah, let's get straight to the mailbag, just because Marquez Valdez-Scantlin looks good. I've seen some nice reps from Joshua Williams. I can't tell a single thing from Trent McDuffie, but that's not his problem. You know, they just don't target him. You know,
it happened to him in college, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually quite boring. Justin Reed, hey, looks the part. Like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire couldn't tell you a thing, man. They don't practice running plays. Okay, so I couldn't tell you a single thing. You know, Willie Gay looks really athletic, but you probably said that last year. Will he play on third down? I don't know yet. Let's just get to the mailbag.
I've actually got a really good one just starting us out, because sure, it keeps making its way to my timeline. And for the fifth offseason in a row, I get to continue to have the discourse about Chris Jones that is going, I mean, at this point, I genuinely believe that this is a bit that everyone is in on specifically to gaslight me and drive me crazy.
Oh, okay.
Because, and this is from Chiefly Bacon, who is a good dude. We've had a lot of great interactions. It's not him. It's the number of people that now, the new thing I'm seeing is, you know, Chris Jones regressed last year. And I can't even bring myself to ask people in what way, like in what way, like what way did he regress? And then they point to sack numbers and my head explodes. And it's just like, I can't do it. So we'll talk about a different aspect of it before I really freak out about it. And maybe he's a guy whose film I need to review. Maybe I need to do the whole 8 games, win, loss. But you know what I'm going to find just as a prediction? You know what? We'll get into that. All right. Chiefly Bacon. After seeing Aaron Donald's new contract.
Oh, yes.
Is Chris Jones going to suffer the same fate as Hill next season? And that's that. Now, that's a reasonable question.
Right, right. No, I love this question. Yes.
So, I don't know, Josh from down in the well, can you, what do you, we'll start with you because Nate, we know Nate's our guy to actually give us a little more, maybe something. Oh, no, that's not promising.
Sure thing, Seth. I appreciate,
I'm curious, Josh,
Seth, I appreciate you throwing it to me down here.
That was really,
That was just a bit for the listeners through the podcast, because you guys have sounded like I was in a well this entire time. But there, they did too. Here's what I'll point out for you guys. I don't know if this is an answer to the question or not, but I do think it's interesting to note that after this year is when Chris Jones's contract gets, there's an out, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I'm putting that phrase mm-hmm. out there and that note out there, mm-hmm. not because the Chiefs wouldn't be willing mm-hmm. to pay him a $27 million cap hit next year. $27 million for Chris Jones next year. This year it's 29, which is a lot, but that's the structure of the deal. I'm not really blinking at that. They'd free up $20 million if they just cut him after this year. But I'm noting that because at age 29 next year, Chris Jones would also probably want a new big deal. So I would say the Chris Jones conversation, I have seen a couple of people kind of connect him with Tyreek Hill. In the format of where they went, I would say if he's not a Chief next year, it's in that vein, because he wants to get paid and the Chiefs haven't given big contracts to guys over 26 or 27, not named Travis Kelce. And even his contract is like still a steal. So that would be my contribution.
That's one of the more reasonable takes on it. And I'm assuming that's why Chiefly Bacon's asking it. So, I mean, Nate, do you have any insight on that? Because it is that age thing matters, maybe a little less for a pass rusher than a wide receiver, maybe a little less.
Yes,
but yeah. Definitely. Right, I would argue. Right. Yeah, I would say it matters. Yeah,
yeah.
But if it's still matters. Tackle, I would say so.
So you know, this was a little bit of tooting my own horn here, but on May 19th, I published an article about players who are in contract years, and yes, technically, Chris Jones is not in a contract year, but theoretically, he is in a contract year. For all the reasons you mentioned, they can, it's wild. You know, they can create $20 million. This is according to Over the Cap, by the way. If they release him after this season, they can create $20 million while only eating $7 million. And if the cap
$20 million, you could probably get an elite pass rusher with that kind of money.
Yeah.
And you can get a boat with that kind of money. Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead, Nate.
And if the cap goes up, then that $7 million gets reduced from a percentage standpoint. You obviously do the math. This has got to be the year, you know. Mark it down. Early June, Nate Taylor. Yes, I'm referring myself in the third person at this point. Yes, Nate Taylor started saying that Chris Jones has to be the most important, best player on the Chiefs defense. I am now fully moved into the Seth Kaiser category. This has got to be it. No more of this nonsense. I shouldn't say it's nonsense, because, I mean, he's a professional player. No more of this, like, dilly-dabbling at defensive end and be the second-best defensive tackle. Hell, if Aaron Donald has a little slippage and you produce your career year, perhaps people will be like, man, when you look at the production, the consistency, the pressure generated, perhaps the sack numbers, hey, Chris Jones might be the new best defensive tackle in the league. There's an opportunity here for him to really thrive, because Anthony Hitchens is not here anymore. Tyrann Mathieu is not on the team anymore. Yes, they traded for Frank Clark, but his, you know, we've done chapter and verse on him. Nick Bolton is still young, but he ain't there yet. We don't know what's going to happen with Juan Thornhill. Willie Gay, you know, he hasn't played a full season yet. So this is Chris Jones's time. And if he plays at an elite level, by the way, one of the greatest radio segments of all time is, quote, player elite. Is Chris Jones elite? Then I get the sense that, yeah, now we can start to get into Aaron Donald territory. Not in Aaron Donald's house, because that would be basically taking the same contract and slapping it on to Chris Jones. But I do get the sense that, like, this is what Chris Jones is striving for. You can accomplish a lot of things this season, Chris Jones. Legendary status, one of the best players in the league, perhaps at his position, if you have a dominant performance in the postseason, which he has yet to do from a statistical standpoint in his career, then yeah, you could get that re-up. Hey, let's negotiate something and let me be a Kansas City legend in the way that, you know, Tyreek Hill was, like, right on the edge. Because I always say, like, when you get to that Kelce 8 to 9 years of just, mm-hmm. like, again, Hall of Fame production, Chris Jones is on. He has an opportunity. He's at the doorstep, and now it's a matter of can he harness it for a full 17-game season, and then can he be like Aaron Donald, which is dominate when it matters most. So, yes, there's a chance. And, yes, Aaron Donald matters a lot to Chris Jones.
I have a couple of questions that have loaded up here. I'm not going to try to change my Zoom setup at this point in the show, but I did get a couple to load because both from JettyRat_RB and from TJF Sports, both questions around the idea of could the Chiefs offense be better with three or four competent receivers than just with Tyreek Hill, or potentially, hey, what if you put that signpost around week 12? By that point, by the playoffs, could that group be better? Mm-hmm. Or would you bet on it being better, Seth?
You're not going to let me rant about Chris Jones.
Did you not already?
No, I did a little, but I, you know what? I appreciate that question, and so I'm going to let the Chris Jones stuff pass. I have never seen, and I've said this before, I have never seen an elite player be talked down by a fan base as much as I see it with Chris Jones. And it blows my mind. In my mentions right now are people like, well, yeah, but he's inconsistent. And I always ask, at what? Oh, wow. I mean, just look at his sack production. Okay, go look up Warren Sapp's sack production. Defensive tackle does not work that way. Especially when you're you know what? I'm not going to do this to myself.
Yeah, yeah. Just say.
Sure, I'm glad I didn't let you rant about Chris Jones.
All you have to do is say, colon, C, Dallas Cowboys game.
And not even that. Every single game, he wins at a really high rate. The sack production isn't going to be there because the guy that was supposed to be the other guy, the guy that has taken a ton of blame, like you said, we've talked about Frank Clark ad nauseum. There were supposed to be two of them.
Yes.
There's a reason.
That's what you have to have in the modern NFL, but go on.
Absolutely. You have to have, you got to have three dudes, really. And two of them should be elite. There's a reason the Rams went all in for Von Miller when they already had Aaron Donald, because they wanted their pass rush to be more consistent. But we've done this a million times. And I honestly, like at this point, like this many seasons in, I just can't anymore. Like it's not just me. Like look at what Brandon Thorne has to say about Chris Jones. Look at whatever you think of maybe Pro Football Focus. Look at what they have to say about him year in and year out. Nobody but Aaron Donald rushes the passer like him from the interior year in and year out. And every year, it's the same thing as the Chiefs since 2018 have not given him a good, like a genuinely consistently good running mate. And every year I hear about how it's Chris Jones's fault. And it blows my mind. Like, I feel like I failed people that subscribe to the newsletter when I talk about complimentary pass rush. The fact that the best pass rushers win about 20% of the time. And those are the very best. And you know what that leaves? 80% of the rest of the snaps. You know what else happens on those 20% where he does win? If no one else is winning, the quarterback can just run away from him.
Comes out really quick.
Yeah, or the ball comes out. But yet somehow it's like, well, no, if he's awesome, he's going to have, you know, like, I can't do this. And just give him some help. But anyway, I ranted, and thank you, Josh, for letting me do that. I do think the Chiefs
totally
offense,
totally let you do that. That was totally within my control. I definitely could have stopped you if I wanted to.
Yeah, Josh from a well has a lot harder time controlling me.
It's really true.
I would just say, I'll answer this one in a short fashion. They have a chance to be more consistent and less easy to maybe against certain personnel and certain scheme and a combination of both, because you need both.
Right.
You can't just run a certain scheme against the Chiefs last year. You needed the personnel too. I think they might be a little tougher to control if MVS plays the way he's played throughout his career and Juju plays the way he's played throughout his career and Sky Moore hits. Those are three big things, right? And Hardman plays as well or better as he's played the rest of his career. If all four of those things happen, and those aren't big bets, right? None of them are huge bets except maybe the rookie receiver. Well, the rest of those are like, they're pretty safe bets, but they're multiple safe bets. And then when you know, the way probability works, it gets a little less likely. Then yes, I think they could be better off in theory.
What do you think, Nate, on that one? Do you have anything you would add there? You want to move on to another topic?
No one is Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
And yes, mm-hmm. the Patriots were really good without Randy Moss.
Hmm. I think I heard you make that point on the Athletic Football Show with Lindsey Jones a couple episodes back on the pod with the little AFC West roundtable. That was a good listen if somebody wants a little brushing up on the division, and Nate's there. So that was a good episode. I meant to mention that earlier. I'm glad that you made the same note. I was like, ooh, that's kind of a fun comparison. Maybe he'll use that on our show too. And he did. Look at that. You get the good stuff here too. Here's a couple of similar questions from just _ Chiefs, whose bio just says, I'm literally only here for Chiefs content. And that really made me laugh. And also from at Jeff Pars, both asking about the complexities of the offense from, how concerned are you that Sky Moore hasn't been able to fully participate to this point? And then also how hard it is for incoming players and especially rookies in Andy Reid's offense. Should Andy Reid tinker with his own playbook a little bit and make things a little less complicated?
Andy Reid's been doing this a long time, so I don't know if you can scale it back. He for what Sky Moore can do right now, he is on the field. He is, as they would say in the coaching ranks, taking mental reps. But I think the real test for him, and I know the Chiefs are being, from precautionary reasons, just like, hey, if you're ready to go at mandatory minicamp, great. If not, then like let's see it in training camp, and then we'll try to work out some things before we get to the preseason games. But it's hard because one of the best things about this is I don't know exactly where the offense is going to go, which is like kind of the point of this whole offseason. Cause neither do the other teams at this point. I think it's more valuable for like Marquez Valdes-Scantlin, Juju Smith-Schuster, more veteran guys to work on that timing and how do you run routes and like, here's why we call this and here's the site adjustments that we're making. Or if Travis does this, then you do that. All those things I think are more valuable right now to veteran players that are going to get the majority of the snaps anyway before Sky Moore figures out his role and the coaching staff sort of accentuates him in that role.
Anything to add there, Seth?
I do think that Reid has shown the ability to work people into the offense early. It just depends on the player. It depends on the skill set. I mean, Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson both came in Andy Reid's offense and were pretty big parts of it pretty early. Like right away. And so, and that's, those are big shoes to fill, obviously, for someone like Sky Moore. The thing is, Sky Moore does have a really good skill set to jump in right away. I think doing the mental rep side of things, he's never learned another pro offense. And so I don't think he needs to unlearn anything, which in a weird way, like if you were going to be coming in, and I think this would be the time as a rookie to where the mental reps might be, a little more okay. You're not trying to unlearn anything. So I think, like Nate said, I think it's more important for the veteran guys. And also, I just think he would probably have gotten worked in slowly regardless. And so I'm not too worried about it. Obviously, you never want to see someone hurt, but I appreciate that they're being cautious right now. This stuff is going to matter way more down the road. And generally speaking, I've never had like a player where I was like, that guy would have been great that year if only he had had more reps at voluntary OTAs. Like guys either get it done or they don't.
Yep.
A lot of questions about the defensive line altogether, and I'll push us back out to the edges with some Frank Clark talk in tow. And after you already gave us, Seth, your fastball on Chris Jones, lots of questions on the edges. My favorite phrasing of it from at WBaker18. I've trapped myself into a cycle of delusion, believing that Josh Kando will be a Pro Bowler this year. How do I get out? The phrasing of your questions, I will say, dear audience, it does matter because sometimes I can only read one that makes sense and I'll pick the funny one. So good work. But what are you guys thinking right now? Because again, there's questions of, hey, who else are the Chiefs going to sign? What's the plan for the D line? Could it be worse than last year as it got a little less talented? I mean, or at least, you lose Melvin Ingram, you add George Karlaftis and some other role players there as well. So what do you guys see at edge?
I wonder what's going on with Trey Flowers come August. And a lot of, where it does help in OTAs is that George Karlaftis has taken all the reps, y'all. Every last one of them. you know, it's fascinating to see Mike Dana, who I think is just a reasonable, respectable defensive end, comes down to Frank Kitts. You knew I'd say it, and here we are, Frank Clark.
Awesome. And I feel good about that, actually.
Because?
What was it? In what regard?
Now, look, there have been workout videos, and look, as I've said, Andy Reid told me, need a quiet offseason. What have we had so far, kids? It's been relatively quiet. Has he been working out? Yeah. Andy, I think, feels really good about Frank because I think there was a real understanding in February. Hey, man, this next year's got to be better than what we just went through. And both men understood that. And so as of right now, as of June 8th, it seems like it's going swimmingly. And he looks to be in better shape than he did this time last year. And what you hope is that he can stay, his body can get stronger and he can get obviously into football shape in training camp, because that's when things sort of, that's when, you know, yes, there was something that occurred in the offseason that was questionable in terms of decision making, but in terms of the actual football part of the job, he had hamstring injuries that he just could not come back from. Or that he came back too soon from, and it was a whole cycle of things, and he really wasn't himself for much of the year. And you know, at this point in his career, he needs to be healthy and on a clear ramp up to be at his best come week one.
I agree that it's their plan seems dependent. It comes down to Clark. If Clark can play at the level Melvin Ingram played at last year, then all you need is for Karlaftis to play at a level like Melvin Ingram played at last year, and you should have a competent pass rush most of the time because you'll have three guys. It won't be ideal, but because really you want two stars and then two other guys. Like if you want, like if you just look at the Rams, right? Look at the Buccaneers the year before, that kind of stuff. You really want four guys. You look at the Niners when they're at their best. They do seem overly, in my opinion, dependent on Clark. We'll see what happens with Kane, though. They obviously saw stuff they liked, and it's really easy to forget about guys in their second season. We'll see.
By the way, if Kando gives them anything, it's better than what happened last year, because he had an ankle injury, and they just basically were like, yep, redshirt year, homie, which was fine, you know? So look up Josh Kando's stats. There are none. He didn't. And I don't mean that maliciously or mean, it just didn't. Like it still boggles my mind because I watched him on the field and he looked like a rookie in the first game, and then he got hurt against the Eagles and you never saw him again. So you know, he didn't record a stat last year. So if he gives them anything, it's a bonus. And what you hope for any young player is, hey, is the second half better than the first half? And if you can say that about Josh Kando, it's a success.
Right. And I think Mike Dana is a guy that we've kind of almost assumed that he hit his ceiling his rookie year, because athletically he doesn't look like he has a lot more. And he doesn't athletically. But I mean, he was competent in year one. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, I wouldn't call him even an average pass rusher, because he didn't win consistently enough one on one. But you know, if let's say he ups his game 5%, you know what? Maybe that's a guy you go from trusting with 300 snaps and trusting him with 400. Although George Karlaftis, based on his college film, literally never comes off the field. So
never, like, never, ever.
I assume that'll change, but they really are. They're relying on George Karlaftis' film in college that he'll translate right away, and Frank Clark. And that is a decision that they have made.
If Orlando Brown does hold out, George Karlaftis might also play left tackle like that. And let him punt also. Like his cleats literally cannot cross over the white lines. He's like Moonlight Graham in Field of Dreams. If George Karlaftis comes off the field at all, you are risking something happening.
Look, look, it's going to happen at some point in his career. You know, he's just a throwback, guys. He's just George Karlaftis, even though he's from Greece. And he wasn't introduced to the sport. He's just a throwback. He's just leather helmet, plays both ways, hand and knees in the dirt. Not just hands and knees in the dirt. He just plays from an old school historical, like, I hope someone says historical and George Karloftis in the same sentence. Just, he's just a throwback, you know, okay? Like, that's just who he is, even though he was a poloer, a water polo athlete literally a decade ago. Don't ever mention that. Why did I mention that? Just continue to say throwback, historical, two-way player. Hell, he looks like a guy that was at the Naval Academy and Army and at the same time, okay?
If you saw him dressed up in a 1940s Army uniform, you would be like, yes, yeah. that makes sense. He looks
Before World War II. Not after, not during, but before.
Not after that. This is like the you would think his name was Dirk Squarejaw, and he's eating apple pie. He's got the American flag out there. He's been baling hay all day. And then it's like, no, dude's from Greece. Like, he plays water. But that is... him and Leo Chanel, man. Like, I am confident.
The cadets. Can we call them that? Let's just call them the cadets right now.
Every
Let's
day,
do it.
Literally Here we are, every kids. Day, Leo Chanel. Every day, Leo Chanel, Nick Bolton, and George Karloftis do their max deadlift every single day. Those guys, they don't do rest days. Those guys, they get done with their stuff. They go to the gym for 6 hours, then they go to bed. And I'm here for it. It's fun.
When I think of George Karloftis, I think of that ESPN 150 college football documentary, which, by the way, great series, but you know they're running Wishbone, you know it's in black and white, and George Karloftis has got another tackle for loss.
So I'm here for it on that part. The defensive ends scare me, though. The defensive line's the scariest part of the team. I hope Karloftis comes through. I love what they tried to do in terms of physicality. So we'll see.
Marvel's doing a lot with the multiverse now, so if there is a Captain Greece anywhere, they wouldn't even have to, like, do CGI or give him a new workout routine. George Karloftis is just... He can use his real name also. George Karloftis is the Greek Steve Rogers, and all of a sudden Captain America has a Greek counterpart that, I don't know, like, crushes olives with his feet and, like, makes the world's best olive oil while also being good at football. I don't know. I think Greek, I think olives. I'm not sure why. I think that's a historical thing.
I don't know.
Maybe his... No, oh, I got it. His shield is an olive.
Oh, man.
Boom.
His shield is an olive.
He traded in his water polo cap for a leather helmet, fellas. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Here's my last question, and if somebody... There were a few questions that I did just close out the tabs on, so my apologies if I didn't get to your question. It's because Seth talked about Chris Jones too much.
Yep.
So from at
it's not
Mike
right
One
what's
Chiefs
happening
fan,
to him. Sorry.
Going to Arrowhead for the first time this year. What's the one barbecue restaurant I cannot miss when I'm there? I wanted to address this because I've gotten a couple of questions from some people who are planning their trips to Kansas City. Yeah. I know there could be different answers to this question, but if you were really tied to one, I want to know what you guys would pick, and I'll give you my answer after.
One barbecue joint while you're in Kansas City?
Yes.
Only stop at one.
I'll say it this way. Whenever I go to Kansas City, I would love to try multiple things, but I'm usually only in town for a day or two at most. And I know that I am already planning around. I'm minus one meal when I go to Kansas City because I know one of them, I am going to Joe's. I am getting a Z-Man. I am getting burnt ends. I am getting fries. And I'm getting them all at once. And I'm watching Josh sit there in horror at the volume of food that I'm eating. And he's watched me put it away. And so... There's a lot of people will tell you a ton of different things. And I'm sure I've never had bad barbecue in Kansas City. And there's so many great places. But Joe's is a cliche, but it's kind of like a cliche. Like, it's a cliche. Like, I don't know. Like, what's a really good cliche? Like, it's like, hey, you know what's a really fun place to visit when you live in Minnesota in December? Well, the Gulf side of Florida. Well, what a cliche. I'm not going there to see those beautiful beaches and the weather that's 75 degrees and sunny while it's 20 where I'm. That's a cliche. Well, yes.
I don't want to offend our people of a certain age, but like, there's a reason they go to Florida, okay? It just makes sense, all right?
Yeah. It does make sense. I'm going to become a snowbird the moment I'm capable of it.
Nate, what's your answer to that question?
My answer will always be Gates because it's what I grew up on and because I believe Ollie Gates created the greatest barbecue sauce of all time. And
it's a good sauce.
It's the best sauce in the world. And I don't say
I've got the spicy one in my fridge right now. I might go get a sip of it mid show.
It's just Gates original barbecue sauce is incredible, and they'll do you right. And yes, they will yell at you, and it's okay because you're new. And I just want you to know, sweetheart, it's not you, but there's a line behind you. And tell me what you want to eat. But hey, when you get there, just have the sauce. It's incredible. I feel blessed that people actually ask us this question, and we have the responsibility, we have the weight, we have the onus,
yes,
to lead them in the right direction. So Seth says, you know, Joe's, which is excellent. I say Gates, which is just incredible. And now, Josh, lead us out, my friend.
Here's what I'll say. If you were to say front to back, like, where could you, which barbecue spot could you eat for a week straight and have perfect different food every time? I think the answer to that question is Q39. I think that the width and breadth of Q39 is unbelievable. I really do. And like you guys have both said, there, it's hard to find a bad answer here. But I think that if you were like, hey, Josh, bad news, last meal, but you get to pick it, what's it going to be? I would think about it for a second, and then I would say something that starts with burn-in Z-Man on toast. Oh. Because that is special. It is special. So I think Q39 might have the highest, like, overall rating, but my number one overall pick for a barbecue dish in Kansas City, shout out to Kent Swanson for putting me onto the toast. It's that. It's burning Z-Man on toast. So I would go Joe's for your first time here, or your one spot. But there's no law that says you can't just go to like three different barbecue places in one day.
Is
just bring some digestive enzymes. Yeah, you'll be all right.
Is Gates Michael Jordan? Is Joe's LeBron James? And is Q39 Steph Curry?
Wow.
It's just, you put my pick as LeBron and as someone who's 37, I'm legally obligated to be on the Jordan side of this debate. I don't know why you did this to me, Nate. Like, and I don't even know if I'm right.
Because I'm obligated to stay here. Gates was here first.
That's true.
And Joe's came after Gates. So then someone who revolutionized the Kansas City barbecue scene. I mean it might be strong, but I'll give it to Q39. I'll do it. Jack Stacks wishes they could be Q39. Sorry to the Damian Lillard of Kansas City barbecue. Which hey, Damian Lillard, all-star, but he ain't Steph Curry.
And that's, you know, here's, you know, since we're talking about this and I know we have to go, I told my wife we'd be done 20 minutes ago. She's going to start hating you guys. The interesting thing about this, like you said that about Jack Stack, and people might take that as like this pot shot. Jack Stack would be the best restaurant, or it would be the best barbecue in the vast majority of towns in America.
It would be the best barbecue in Buffalo.
Let's go.
Get him.
It would. And so this is like one of those things where you're like trying to pick, like, it's like when people say, you know, name your five greatest Chiefs in history, right? You know, if we leave someone off that, it's not that they're bad. It's just like, how do you compare someone to Patrick Mahomes, right? How do you compare someone to some of these guys? So how do you compare someone to Derek Thomas? That's not fair.
Gates is Lynn Dawson. It's no question it's on the Mount Rushmore. I mean, it is obvious Hall of Famer, carve it into stone. And then maybe is Patrick Mahomes Joe's? Or is Patrick Mahomes Q39? Is that too
I
much
think he good? Gets Boy, I think he gets really, the Q39. Oof. Yeah. Man, Q39's coming out ahead in this. I mean, they're like
that went well for them.
I've never had anything from Q39. Like you said, the depth of stuff you can get that is all excellent
Whereas, like, I think maybe, like, the very tip-top ceiling for Joe's, like, its very best fastball might be better than Q39's best fastball.
I got it. Nope. I got it. Q39 is Alabama football. But if I have the number one overall pick, I'm going to go get Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson. Clemson's not the program that Alabama is, but if I'm getting my first pick, my quarterback is the Burning Z-Man on toast.
Nice.
You're welcome.
Well done. You did have it. Well done.
I did it. We've done it. The show's over. Delays and technical difficulties and all. So you can follow all of us on Twitter at by Nate Taylor, at Real MN Chiefs Fan, at JB Briscoe. You can read all of Nate's work, including the most recent piece on Orlando Brown Jr. up on theathletic.com right now. You can get Seth's work at The Athletic and mnchiefsfan.substack.com, including a new film review on Isaiah Pacheco and what his role in the backfield might be. And I tweet everything that I do, so you can just follow me there. So if that's all, I mean, I won't know if you guys are done for 40 or 50 seconds because of my delay, but you guys can go ahead and wrap it up.
Here's my question to the questioners. Again, thank you for the mailbag questions. They were awesome as always. Dear listener, in the Kansas City barbecue lexicon, who is Donovan Mitchell? Just who's someone that, like, they just, it's time. It's been time. It's been fun. I guess if, like, Quinn Snyder was the chef's, like, not coming back. So, like, you know, be gentle. But who's the Donovan Mitchell of Kansas City Chiefs barbecue?
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.